Now you're back online. I call the Senate Resource Committee to order, and thank you for joining us. It's not often that we get a chance to get away from Juneau during the middle of the session to hold hearings, and we look forward to what we have here today. I want to have a chance to introduce the committee members, and perhaps you don't know all of them, and we'll have a little bit more extensive introductions than we normally would in a hearing in Juneau. We have over on my left Senator Georgiana Lincoln from Rampart, Senator Lyman Hoffman from Bethel, Senator Rick Halford is from Chugiak, Senator Steve Frank, Fairbanks, and Senator Mike Miller, who is not a member of our committee but will be participating today as the prime sponsor of SDR 19 North Pole. Just a few housekeeping measures and then we'll get started. We're going to first take testimony from those that have been invited that represent organizations, and then we will go into public testimony immediately following that. If you have not signed up on a sign-in list or notified us, if you're representing an organization, please do so. There are lists in the back. I'll make sure that you have an opportunity to participate. If there are any time constraints on your time, if you can only testify in a certain window, let us know that too, and we'll try to arrange at the time that is most convenient to you. We plan to meet all day and conclude by 4:30 this afternoon if there's sufficient testimony to keep us going that long, and we'll work all through the day as necessary. I note that we have online teleconference sites in Anchorage, Barrow, Bethel, Fairbanks, Fairbanks with us, Juneau, Nome, and Sitka. I expect Rangel to come online shortly with Senator Taylor. And then Senator Pierce called in, and I think everybody here heard that Senator Pierce is from Anchorage and is online with us also today. Just note for the members that we have this the older version of the teleconference mic set up, so when you speak, be sure to press the button and then turn it off when you're done speaking. So it isn't a drain on the other microphones, and speak into the microphones so everybody can hear you. I didn't mention earlier, but I believe it's in the publication that there's a 5-minute time limit on organizations and a 3-minute time limit for individuals. If you have written materials or graphics that you'd like to use, you're welcome to it. Teresa Sager, who is staff to the committee today and normally staff to Senator Miller, is sitting back to me, make sure that she gets those materials, and we'd be happy to distribute that to the committee members. And lastly, I thank the Fairbanks North Star Borough and the staff here for being so helpful and getting this set up, and also their support today in making this as comfortable a hearing as possible, and so we can hear from you. The bill that the resolution that we have before us today is Senate Joint Resolution 19, which asks, among other things, asks Congress to clarify the definition of public lands. And just in the introduction, I'm going to just ask each member of the committee in the beginning if they'd like to make about a minute or two statements, and then we'll get started with the testimony. But I just say, as a lifelong Alaskan, that
all of the information in the back of the room, I was disheartened to see last night when I went through my packet that the excerpts from the Attorney General's briefing that was presented to the Joint House and Senate session on March 8th is chosen excerpts, that it is not a complete excerpt of what did happen at the briefing, and I am sorry that that also was remiss in not putting the whole testimony in there of that whole meeting rather than just the chosen individuals and what they had to say. And with that, I'll be very pleased to hear from all of the folks that are in Fairbanks, and hopefully we can extend this to the other parts of Alaska.
Thanks, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'll keep my comments brief, but I would say that I would differ from you in that whenever we talk about access to fish and game, there always comes into play the question of subsistence. And when we're talking about changing ANILCA and asking Congress to do so, you know, that the issue of subsistence and access to those resources does come up. We always talk about equal access and treating everyone equal, but we went ahead and already made some changes on equal access when we entered and changed our constitution on fisheries. You know, we have given many people in this state access to fisheries that other members of this state do not have. So I think that there has been a precedent set, and I think that this approach, if we really want to manage our fishing game, maybe we should address and change our constitution. That's my personal opinion.
Thanks, Senator Hoffman. Senator Helfer.
Federal management's been a disaster on land, and if we lose the Katie John case, it'll be a disaster on the water. That's because it's defined by federal courts. If you take the court cases, the Bobby case essentially tells us that you can't limit subsistence at all until you've eliminated every other use. You've got cases in Southeast, the Roe case says that you can sell under customary traditional trade subsistence resource for cash, $15,000 in individual sale, $75,000 in the aggregate. If that is applied, I don't think it's what was intended by the original preference, but if that kind of standard is applied, I believe that the management structure can't possibly work. I think we can deal with subsistence under the Constitution, but until we get amendments to ANILCA, we're not going to be able to get anything positive or anything that works. The federal system doesn't work because it's defined by the courts.
Thank you, Senator Halford. Senator Frank?
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, I'd just like to add that I do believe that we should try to make a move going. After now, I think we can have subsistence in our state without a constitution. There has been a lot of work to make it happen back when Nickel held together.
Yes, I would, Mr. Chairman. However, could I defer to Senator Miller, since he is the prime sponsor, and then if I could speak after him?
That would be fine. Has Senator Taylor and Rangel joined us yet? Okay, I assume not. We will go next to the prime sponsor of Senate Resolution 19, Senator Mike Miller, for your sponsor statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a three-page sponsor statement, and I will not read all that, but I will just touch on a few things that I believe to be some of the critical things that we're touching in SDR 19. First of all, I do not believe that SDR 19 is a challenge to the federal subsistence priority. What I do believe that SDR 19 is a simple resolution requesting that Congress recommit to the obligations made to the state of Alaska in the Statehood Compact, and to reconfirm that ANILCA was not intended to preempt state management of fish and game resources. And I believe, in my opinion, this goes much deeper than this goes to the issue of state without the legislature being able to be involved, as we know, in order to change the Patriot Compact, not only does the federal Congress have to do it, but also the state legislature has to do it. What is the next item the federal Congress is going to change? Are they going to change the 90-10 split on royalty off of federal land? Maybe they'll make it 50-50. Maybe they'll make it 10-90 the other way. If we do not make a statement here and say that we are going to stand up for states' rights in Alaska, we will forfeit all those other issues that will be coming along, and that the federal government will be coming along if we do not stand up and make a statement. And secondly, SGR 19 requested Congress reaffirmed its original intent and to amend NOPA to clarify. When they said federal lands, they meant federal lands. They did not mean state lands. They did not mean private lands. But federal lands means federal lands, so that there can be no misinterpretation by the court system that federal lands means anything but federal lands, that federal lands do not mean state lands or private lands. So I think that the resolution is fairly narrowly defined. I think it's a states' rights issue we must continue on with. And I believe what Senator Pierce and myself have proposed in this resolution is consistent with the position that hasn't even been taken by the governor of the state of Alaska, Governor Knowles, because he's been consistent that he wants to keep state management fishing game on state lands and private lands. So I believe this is consistent with the position that he's been taking. And I would urge your support of this resolution. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Miller. Senator Pierce, you can go ahead now.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I do appreciate the fact that you have all traveled to Fairbanks and that you do plan to do hearings throughout the state to give all the people of the state an opportunity to discuss Senate Joint Resolution 19. I will be brief. I do have written testimony that will be put into the record, but there are just a couple of points I'd like to make to put the importance of these hearings into perspective. I'm a sponsor of this resolution because I'm convinced that we as a state, we Alaskans, are facing a major crisis. We've only been a state for 36 years, but we are faced already with losing one of our major rights, privileges, benefits, and or responsibilities of statehood, and that's the management of our own fish and wildlife resources. It's hard to believe that the compromise legislative package that was passed back in 1980 by Congress and called ANILCA created the problem, but it did. ANILCA had a provision which created a priority for subsistence taking of fish and wildlife, among other things, by rural Alaskan residents on federal public lands. There's nothing in the law, however, which says that the Secretary of Interior or Secretary of Commerce can preempt all state management in Alaska if the state is not in compliance with the provisions for federal lands. The law did not say that reserved water rights or navigational servitude doctrines could be used by the courts to extend federal jurisdiction throughout all state and private lands and waters of our state. Clearly, the Alaska delegation and the rest of Congress anticipated that Alaska would assume management on all lands in Alaska by meeting the requirements of ANILCA's Title VIII. They didn't anticipate, nor did we, that the federal government, other than through federal court oversight, would have to directly manage the fish and wildlife resources. We now have, however, a state Supreme Court ruling which essentially puts Alaska out of compliance. We have a district court judge's ruling which states that the federal government is authorized to preempt state management in navigable waters under the authority of the Navigational Servitude Doctrine. We have a reversal by the federal government, which initially agreed the public lands in ANILCA was limited to federal lands and waters. They now argue that the reserved water rights authorities of the federal agencies give them the power to preempt state management on navigable waters. We are embroiled in a continuous debate over whether a state constitutional amendment putting Alaska in compliance with the federal law will in fact return management to Alaska. Alaska is becoming painfully aware of the fact that there are major flaws with Title VIII of ANILCA. Even the Attorney General admits that corrections in this title are absolutely essential for a constitutional amendment to put us in compliance with federal law. All of the options before us are complicated. It is clear to me that there will be no consensus immediately on the ultimate solution to the issue for all state and federal lands. However, I have co-sponsored with Senator Miller this resolution because I believe it's one area where we can get as close to a consensus as we're going to get right now. The resolution doesn't challenge the subsistence priority, nor do I challenge the subsistence priority on federal lands and waters. It is right and just. It does, however, ask Congress to reconfirm state jurisdiction on state and private lands and waters. I do not believe our congressional delegation, nor Congress as a whole, would have allowed the passage of legislation setting in motion the inevitable preemption of all state and fish wildlife management in Alaska, regardless of their own personal priorities for federal conservation units. We're asking the delegation and Congress to restate the original intention of ANILCA to save our fisheries and our wildlife programs on state lands and waters from federal preemption. The alternative would be to allow the federal courts to continue their course of selectively revising the intent of Congress. Senator Halford just gave a few excellent examples. It has been extremely selective. There is a lot of revisionist history going on. It is clearly possible that the state could lose this case in the unpredictable Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. The Attorney General said that the Supreme Court would likely not hear the case if it is appealed. We're looking squarely at a bad decision by a federal district court judge and a potential bad decision by a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which may not be appealable to the Supreme Court. Alaskans both need, but also deserve, a clarification of the intent of the Statehood Compact and ANILCA. We are directing our immediate attention to Congress to help us out of this crisis. I'm hopeful that most Alaskans, the state administration, and eventually our entire delegation can support our effort. With that, I thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Pierce. I'll give one last chance right now for Senator Taylor and see if he's joined us. Okay, we will proceed with the testimony. I'm going to be working off the list of those who have responded to our invitation to participate, and I believe these have so indicated, and if you're here, please step forward and testify. If not, we'll skip over these organizations and we'll come back later to see if the people are here. Atna, Inc., what do you want? Doyon Unlimited, Marty Thompson. And just so we have, this will be the same for everybody, your name on the record, even though we know who you are. Go ahead and state it so we have it on the tape. This event is being taped and will be part of the committee records.
You're leaving on Thursday.
A pleasure to see all of you. We've visited with many of you on this issue, it seems, time and time and time again. I am curious and a little sad to hear that, though now we're calling it a states' rights issue. I want to note, and no one commented, that the state courts have struck down actions by the legislature that the legislature has passed to try to resolve this issue, specifically the issues down in Kenai. And I think that's the only state courts striking down actions that they found unconstitutional by the legislature. So this, we need to be a little careful. This is not only a state's rights, the big bad federal government coming in. Our own state judicial system has struck down actions by the legislature when they, in their opinion, are unconstitutional. At this point in my testimony, I would normally thank the committee for giving me the opportunity to proceed with my views on this matter. However, this morning, I'm not going to do that. I mean no disrespect to the committee. However, I am compelled to comment on the process undertaken by the committee to determine the views of Alaskans on this important matter before us today. According to a memorandum from the chairman to all legislators, dated March 24, 1995, the Senate Resources Committee will be holding three hearings on the measure before us, one in Fairbanks, one in Soldotna, and one in Juneau. According to the memo, the purpose of these hearings is to provide resource user groups and individuals with a first-hand opportunity to put input on the bill, or to provide input on the bill. Don't get me wrong, I'm happy when the legislative committee comes to the Interior, but the committee has chosen to hold three hearings on a resolution which would gut a subsistence preference for rural Alaskans, and the committee chooses to hold three hearings in urban communities. I can appreciate very much that it's difficult for the committee to travel during a very busy legislative session. It's hard for the committee to visit Minto and seek the wisdom of our traditional chief, Peter John. It's hard for the committee to visit Chalkeetsik and Dalado and Holy Cross. during a busy legislative session. However, 1 week a year, leaders of our rural communities throughout the state visit Juneau for the Village Participation Conference. This week is that week that they're in Juneau. And just coincidentally, this is the week that Cavite has chosen to take its hearings on the road. In my opinion, this is bad form for a committee which purports to be interested in the views of all Alaskans. I am disappointed in this process. I hope that the committee will rectify it by scheduling hearings which are accessible to the people who depend on the subsistence priority, the people who live in rural Alaska. Now to the matter at hand. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I'm a Republican. I'm an urban resident. I hunt and fish. Yet I believe that people who live in rural areas should have a preference to hunt and fish in times of shortage. Being an Alaskan has never meant that you do only what is in your self-interest. Being a real Alaskan means that we recognize the needs of others and lend them a hand. Self-sacrifice is a traditional Alaskan value. I choose to live in urban Alaska. Most of us in this room have chosen to live here. I'm glad to see many of our representatives from the villages here this morning. In urban Alaska, we enjoy a world of modern conveniences. Yes, we have the opportunity to hunt in the fall and fish in the summer, but we also have the opportunity to shop at Fred Meyer's, Safeway, and Foodland. We have the opportunity to work for wages all year, so we have a choice of what we want to eat when we can get it. But the many people who are not here today, the people who are in Juneau this week, also have made a choice. They have chosen to live in rural Alaska. Many have chosen to live a traditional Alaskan lifestyle. They have chosen to depend on subsistence for their food. But more than that, subsistence is their culture. Subsistence is what differentiates rural Alaska from people who live in other parts of our state. It's a source of pride and a source of identity. As we all know, life in the villages is not easy, and it's not plush. But making it in Alaska has never been easy or plush. If being an Alaskan means anything, it means protecting that one lifestyle, which is uniquely Alaskan. That lifestyle is subsistence. In my opinion, H.R. 19 does not protect subsistence. To be a real Alaskan means to protect subsistence and the people who choose to live it 365 days a year. Again, in my opinion, Senate Joint Resolution 19 does not respect subsistence. As Republicans, we say that we believe in traditional family values. One of our most important such values is the value of work, hard work, and self-dependence. Subsistence is self-dependence. It's not welfare. It builds character. It provides a model for our children. It builds self-esteem. We must respect people who work, who choose to work for their food. Yet a Republican-dominated legislature seeks to weaken the one means that rural people have to keep themselves off of welfare. In my opinion, to be a real Republican means to respect self-dependence. Subsistence is self-dependence. And it is a value that Alaskans have respected for generations. In my opinion, Senate Joint Resolution 19 does not respect subsistence. So why are we here, and how did we get here? The Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act declared that Aboriginal hunting and fishing rights of Alaska Native people were extinguished. At the time ANSCA was passed, Congress fully expected that the state would protect its traditional subsistence lifestyle of those people who were practicing and dependent upon it at that time. 10 years later, when Congress enacted ANILCA, it wasn't so sure that the subsistence lifestyle would enjoy state protection. It granted a subsistence priority on lands subject to federal jurisdiction. It's incredible to me that Congress would consciously choose to exclude fishing from a rural subsistence preference. Fishing is an integral part of the subsistence lifestyle. It always has been, and it always will be. And the courts now are starting to recognize this. The Congress gave the state of Alaska repeal the state law that granted a rural subsistence priority. There was no problem until 1989 when the Supreme Court ruled the subsistence law unconstitutional. I am firmly convinced that there would be no subsistence problem if the legislature would submit a constitutional amendment to the vote of the people of Alaska. I honestly don't understand why for the past 5 years the Alaska legislature has said we don't trust the voters to make a decision. It is no wonder that rural people must look to Washington, D.C., and not their fellow Alaskans in Juneau to protect a traditional Alaskan lifestyle. A lack of support for subsistence among many urban legislators is another warning of just how far we have strayed from the traditional Alaska values which we purport to hold so dear. Hard work, self-dependence, looking out for one another, these are Alaskan values, and that is what subsistence is all about. I firmly believe that there will be little chance that Congress, with all the weighty problems before it, will choose to spend its scarce resources to roll the rural and native people of Alaska. Perhaps Senate Joint Resolution 19 will pass. I'm just sure it will. Perhaps the Alaska delegation will be forced to distract itself away from legislation which will benefit all Alaskans. In my opinion, that would be a waste of time. Eliminating Title 8 of ANILCA, in my opinion, is a non-starter in Washington, D.C. I'm glad to hear other people make that comment and commitment. The solution to subsistence rests with Alaskans. It is a constitutional amendment in which all Alaskans get to decide the future of subsistence, not just special interest groups. Senate Joint Resolution 19 is not a constructive problem to the subsistence issue. It will be, as they say, in my opinion, dead on arrival in Washington, D.C. I would hope, members of the committee, that we could concur and put a subsistence constitutional amendment for the people of the state of Alaska. Again, thank you for hearing my testimony this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. And just in a brief response to the scheduling for this meeting, we had originally planned to have it last Saturday, and because of conflicts with other Dennis Fairbanks and other legislators, that wasn't possible. Today ended up being about the only time that we could fit in between now and middle of April, and in the interest of having some hearings, this was our best option. I recognize it wasn't really good for the conference in June. I apologize for that, but I hope that those people who wish to, who are at that conference, are not able to testify today, will be able to.
Thank you. As I commented, I didn't realize the time constraints on the committee, but I would hope that the village participation people who represent the rural class would have an opportunity to comment on this issue as well.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Fairbanks Fish Game Advisory Committee, Lynn Lovingood.
Thank you. My name is Lynn Levengood. I'm a member of the Fairbanks Advisory Committee to the boards, the Alaska Boards of Fish and Game, a member of the Alaska Wildlife Conservation Association, local attorney, and so the Fairbanks Advisory Committee did not specifically address this hearing. We have had a long-standing commitment to equal opportunity for all Alaskans to Alaska's wildlife resources. We've also had a long-standing commitment and opposition to federal control and non-management of Alaska's resources. This is a states' right issue, and no other state in the union has the burden that Alaska faces. But this is, more basically, is an equality of mankind issue. First of all, we're all Americans. And then we're all Alaskans. Everyone in this room is an Alaskan, and I'm proud of that. But our state cannot allow the federal government to create an apartheid division of its citizens. No other state bears this discrimination, this discriminatory treatment of its state's population. There's absolutely nothing wrong with equality and equality is a cornerstone of our Constitution and needs to be upheld and supported at all costs. Alaska Native Interest Lands Claims Act, and ILCA, did not alter the statehood compact with the federal government. Alaska has the authority to manage its fish and game. And though a federal judge has interpreted and expanded the that act, and ILCA has been amended at least 8 or 9 and perhaps 10 times and should be once again amended, to recognize that Alaska has subsistence laws on its books to provide a preference to those who rely upon the resources in times of shortage. I currently believe that the Alaska subsistence law actually complies with the ILCA because it does provide preference based upon reliance on the resource. And those preferences, for those of you who have filled out a Tier 2 application, you have to answer a bunch of questions. And those questions are weighted. And of the 5 questions you're asked, 4 of them have to deal with where you live in one way, shape, or form. So in fact, there is a residency weighted preference in a way that Alaska's subsistence law is currently implemented. Of course, the difference between the Alaska subsistence law and the federal rural preference as interpreted is that the Alaska subsistence law provides an equal opportunity to all Alaskans who rely on Alaska's wildlife resources. It's not an artificial division. It's not apartheid by zip code. It's based upon reliance upon the resource. The current federal rural preference ignores Alaskans who rely upon the resource and wrongfully assumes that only rural residents have such a reliance. But let's be honest about this quote rural unquote preference. Is it rural or is it racial? And I have to raise that because many of those who advocate this quote-unquote rural preference talk in terms of preserving a culture, a heritage, or a tradition. But the Alaska Native Settlement Act extinguished all Aboriginal claims, made all Alaskans equal in their standing to the access to Alaskan wildlife resources. So let's look at rural residents and urban residents and see who is truly disadvantaged when it comes to harvesting Alaska's wildlife resources. Is it the people who live where the wildlife resources abound in their own backyard? Or is it the person who has to travel hundreds of miles to unfamiliar territory to hunt? Who needs a preference? And what relationships does residency have, in fact, on the dependency of wildlife resources for sustenance of your family or for maintaining one's cultural heritage? If there is a relationship, then I suggest that the rural residents have an easier task of maintaining their cultural heritage and traditions than those of us and those of Native heritage who live inside municipal city limits. And I am told that those who live in Alaska cities comprise a substantial majority of all of Alaska's Native peoples. But for any government to favor one culture over another is blatantly unconstitutional. Equal protection and equality is a cornerstone of democracy and our Constitution. There is no federal right that allows the federal government to tell some Alaskans that they are second-class citizens and can't compete equally with others. What right does the government have to tell some of its people that they are inferior, such that they can't compete equally, and therefore must always have some special consideration or preference? How better to perpetuate an inferior class than to keep some Alaskans downtrodden and believing that they need some type of special advantage to be equal? What type of leaders would tell their constituents or a portion of the people they represent that they can't compete equally and need a preference? This suggests that those type of persons that perpetuate the downtrodden are those who divide power from oppressing others so that they can maintain maintain their power by providing handouts and favoritism. Such leadership, such governments, perpetuates racism, class division, and apartheid. And just as America's welfare system has enslaved a whole generation and needs radical change, so does the federal fallacy of, quote, rural preference, unquote. What about all the Alaskans who live in the rail belt or other Alaskan cities who, in fact, rely on Alaska's renewable resources? Doesn't our government and the federal government owe equal protection to all its citizens based upon their reliance? Not creating an artificial zip code apartheid system. Doesn't equal reliance require equal treatment? State divided can certainly not stand. And if you believe in the equality of mankind, you should support this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Logan. I just ask if, again, remind folks that if you have any written testimony, if you'd like that for the record, then by that, I'll see the comments you're made. If you don't, that's fine. You do certainly have my
Thank you.
Down on Chiefs.
Right. Okay. All right, then. We're waiting for the town off sheet, I think.
Yeah. Too bad I don't turn on the microphone.
That's possible.
There's nothing I can do.
All right.
Not again.
Okay, if you'd like to continue, that's fine, because we can hear you just fine. But if would you like to have somebody else read it, or is it in a form where they can? Okay. Okay. If you feel better later in the day and would like to continue, let me know, and maybe you can get some hot tea and lemon and get that throat working. Okay. Thank you very much. Next is Alaska Miners Association. Not here today. Okay. Alaska Outdoor Council. Dick Bishop.
I don't know, maybe they didn't turn on, or I can't contact them because it's not on the Iowa site, so.
We heard the first testimony.
Yeah, they might not turn the microphone on. Well, we could say something, but I'd rather not. It's not procedure to call out on.
Be brave, jump in there.
I did call Fairbanks Hill, I don't know if she's going to get on to it.
Fairbanks, this is a bridge. We cannot hear anything on the network.
There.
That switch is not on.
We hope we take care of it now.
I'll repeat the last part. The council does applaud the legislature's determination to deal with the insidious invasion of Alaska's Fish and Game Management Authority by the federal government. As you know, the council just presented both Senate President Pierce and House Speaker Phillips with our outstanding conservation legislator award, recognition of their leadership in that effort. In a recent news article, I characterized SDR 19 and HDR 33 as voices in the wilderness of Anilka. Senate Joint Resolution summarizes many of the troublesome issues created by Anilka and urges Congress to address and fix a very few of those problems by making clear what Anilka actually already says, but unclearly. Among them, federal government is not authorized by Congress to override the Statehood Act and Compact. Federal government is not authorized by Congress to extend its management to state or private lands or waters. Two earlier legal analyses confirm these conclusions. In 1982, then done in 1990 by Paul Lanzini, a nationally prominent fish and game resources lawyer, at the request of the Alaska Outdoor Council. Specifically to address the question of whether the federal government had authority to extend management off of federal lands. Mr. Lanzini has worked on contracts for the Department of Law, and I believe he's still under contract with the Department of Law. His conclusion says, in part, and I quote, ANILCA makes no provision for extension of federal regulatory power over non-federal lands and waters. He also says, and I quote, we conclude that Congress has not exerted its property clause power in ANILCA so as to authorize an extension of federal management of fish and wildlife to state and private lands and waters, even after the federal government assumes administration of the ANILCA subsistence management system. So what they're saying is that the straying from what was originally intended from Congress that has been going on lately is inappropriate, and in reference to Senator Miller's remarks, the resolution to try to bring that into back into the original intent is right on the money. But in spite of such analyses, various groups are pushing for federal management of fish and game on state lands and waters and on private lands. SDR 19 reminds and urges Congress to clear up that confusion on these issues, and we urge its passage. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I would like to leave copies with the committee of both of those legal analyses for the record also.
Thank you. I'd be happy to take those. Senator Helfer.
Giving birth to the discussion we're having here today.
that the federal courts should not be making management decisions in the state of Alaska unless they're making management decisions in every other state of the United States of America. We believe that the 10th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution clearly states that only those powers that are authorized by the U.S. Constitution rest with the federal government, and the U.S. Constitution does not authorize federal management of fish and game within the boundaries of any sovereign state of the United States. We believe that you must support the U.S. Constitution, that you have the right and you've sworn to support the state constitution, and until the people of Alaska see fit to change that constitution, its provisions must prevail. We believe that it was a compact between the people of the state of Alaska and the United States government that the United States government forced us to vote on as Alaskans. Not as rural Alaskans, not as urban Alaskans, but as Alaskans. And we would echo what Mr. Levengood said earlier. We are not in favor of apartheid by zip code. We believe we are all Alaskans and that we must solve these problems as Alaskans. Every time that we run to the federal government to solve our problem for us, instead of solving it ourselves, we are further divided. And as we're divided, I believe that you will see the anti-hunting groups come in here and not only take away the right to hunt from urban, but the right to hunt by rural. They laughed 2 years ago when they visited Minto, when they were up here for the Wolf Summit. They didn't understand the need of some of those people out there. They didn't care. Animal rights advocates would love to further divide us so that they could conquer us. And right now, in the state of Alaska, there are less animals killed by humans and harvested to feed humans in the state of Alaska than there are deer killed by roadkill in the state of Pennsylvania. The answer is in providing the resource for the people. With no shortage, we solved the problem. We think that we would fight to feed the needy, whether they're rural or they're urban. I know people who live in rural areas who compete, who get a rural preference right now under Tier 2, who commute via airplane or by road to either Anchorage or Fairbanks to go to their urban job and make in excess of $100,000 a year. Should that person have a rural subsistence priority over someone who lives in Fairbanks or Anchorage, who makes a low income and depends on that resource to feed their family? We don't think so. The answer is not in where you live, but again, we would echo what Mr. Levengood said and say that we believe that the answer is those people that have a reliance on the resource should have a priority, and we would grant them that priority. But we would first ask that the shortage be removed, because the shortage is not in overhunting by humans, but overhunting by four-legged predators in the state of Alaska. The statehood compact is clear. The federal government cannot unilaterally change that agreement. We're strong states' rights advocates. We're asking you to protect that constitution. We agree with this resolution. We don't think it's the solution. We think the solution must come from the people of the state of Alaska. There must be further discussion among us without the threat of some federal acts falling on our neck. Otherwise, we will be managing a resource, but we will be managing it according to their rules. And that's not right. We can't allow any erosion. Senator Miller's right. Any change must come from the people. And we understand that there are those people who have a need for the resource greater than other people. And we would support that again. I'll tell you that we recently compared for each zip code in the state, though, area, the number of people that apply for permanent fund dividends. You may have seen some of these numbers already yourself. The number of registered voters in those zip code areas in the last election. The number of voters in the 94 election for each one of those communities. And the number of hunting licenses and fishing licenses sold as a percentage of the number of people who voted in the last election. And if you compare those numbers, all of which are public information, you find out that there's about 10% of the people statewide that buy hunting licenses and fishing licenses, rural or urban. And in some cases, the urban communities buy more hunting licenses as a percentage than the rural communities by far. Are they not buying hunting licenses when they depend on the resource, even though they can get them for, what, $5? If they need that resource? Are they harvesting game without complying with state laws now? Or are they not
really going out there to harvest the game? We don't know the answer to that. But I would put before you that if people are relying on the resource and they get a $5 license to harvest, that they should be doing that so we know who really does rely on the resource. Is it only 10% of some of those rural communities, as the licenses would indicate, and their families? Or is there a greater reliance? These are unanswered questions that we don't think support giving a rural preference on subsistence. But throw that issue aside, and we would ask the people across the state to try to join us to alleviate the shortage. We can do that now if we merely follow stipulations of our state constitution as further defined under SB 77 that passed last year, and some of the improvements in SB 77 that are under consideration right now. Alleviate the shortage. We have no argument among the people of the state of Alaska. Federal management has created a shortage. Eco-management styles have created a shortage. We should work together to eliminate that. And with that, I would say we do support this, not as the final answer. I don't think that's what Mr. Senator Miller or any of the other sponsors of this legislation would have, but as a step toward protecting the state of Alaska's constitution and our state's rights. And then we really need to solve some of these problems together as Alaska. Thank you, and I'd answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just, you remind me, first, several of our speakers this morning have gone a little bit over the 5-minute limit, and we're going to be a little flexible, but I sure like to remind you to strive to respect for other people to watch the time limit. And this teleconference is with knowledge of several other teleconference sites, except for Senator Pierce, who's in Juneau, and Senator Taylor, when he joins us, will be from Wrangell. There will be other opportunities for teleconference input from other sites. And I just want to remind committee members and those testifying, be sure to flip your switch forward when you're speaking and switch it back off when you're not. And when I was acknowledging the staff support earlier, I failed to mention that we have able staff support from the Legislative Information Office, and I'm sorry I don't know the names of all the people that can wave at us. I thank you for helping us today, and you're doing a fine job. Next is Alaska Independence Party, Lynette Clark. Alaska Reclamation Crew, Dexter Clark.
Juno, we can't hear anything.
No, just you need to switch your microphone forward.
Okay.
I think that would be okay.
I'll reintroduce myself then for folks that were offline. I'm Lynette Clark. I'm the Party Secretary of the Alaskan Independence Party. Senator Miller, your joint resolution is one that I applaud you for. I think that it is an incredibly important issue for the Alaskan citizens. You mentioned the Equal Footing Act, Equal Footing Admission, mentioned the State of the Compact. I would hope that in your deliberations on this joint resolution that you would also include, in the last page where you say you're going to send copies of this to various people, that you would include a copy of the State of the Compact and a copy of our state constitution and a copy of the Omnibus Act, a copy of all these documents down to these people so they understand that they have contracts that they entered into in 1958 and other dates shortly thereafter, including the Omnibus Act, which gave us our transportation system. That the passing of the NILCA and the passing of ANSCA is in direct violation of our favorite compact and the documents that have been burrs under our saddle and have, through a Machiavellian system of politics, put wedges between a people of the North. I am
a white girl sitting here in front of you, but I'm the culmination of a lot of genes that came across Europe, came across that ocean, hit Plymouth Rock, and married into the Native American people. I have lived a subsistence lifestyle at 5 years old. My bird dog for my dad, hunting quail, and hunting rabbit. I know what it means to live off the land through gardening and hunting. I know how important it is for community and to a people to maintain that pride. It brings a sense of ownership, of awe, and of wonder of what this land can provide. Mr. Thompson, Morris Thompson, I believe, said, why are we here and how did we get here? I think it is blatantly obvious. Our contract with the federal government, our stateless compact, our enabling act, our vote to become a state, has been poured out to the nth degree. You folks have got a tough road to hoe because this is a particular issue that has produced an incredible wedge in our society. You look around this room, and I see neighbors and friends and people that I've lived in the interior with or see around town in the interior for the last 20 years. This is the face of Alaska, and our opinions that are coming to you are coming, I believe, in all sincerity. I think Mr. Thompson made some good, really good points. I think Lynn Levengood spoke well. Mr. Seekins also brought fresh insight into your problem. But it's sometimes the answer is no, and this resolution, I think, assists. I also would address Beverly Messick, who I'm really proud to see speaking up. I know it's difficult to get in front of the crowd. But her bill, I think it's House Bill 33, I had a copy, talks about the race issue. And I want to bring that up. What do? I don't have the required percentage of Native blood that ANSCA put in place to get subsistence, to be able to proudly live off the land. We talk about people living in the bush and in rural areas, they make a choice to do that. There's people that are living in cities that would love to get the hell out of that rat race and embrace the work and the ethics of living that style of life and can't do it because they simply cannot make a living out there. We've got problems in state that we must address. And part of those problems are generated on a continual basis by the federal government telling us to change our constitution to come into compliance. Senator Hoffman, you don't look like you're listening to me at all. I beg your pardon, sir. Okay. I know you're in a rock and a hard place, and I'll tell you, I wouldn't want to be in your position because you'll get flack from all over the state. You have taken an oath to uphold and defend a document that men and women have shed blood for. And you must take that into consideration. When we look at our relationship as a state within our union of states, and that means that we have to rely on those affirming contracts, those contracts that put us where we are right now, as Morris said, how did we get here? This is how we got here. We rolled over to the feds time and time again. We have to tell them no, and please support this Joint Resolution 19. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. The Alaska Reclamation Crew, Dexter Clark. Following Mr. Clark, Urban Native Association is John Ridgetown here.
All done switching is quick, I take it.
If the switch is forward, okay. You don't have to do anything else besides testify.
My name is Dexter Clark. I'm the chairman of the Alaska Reclamation Crew. We have the honor of being here because we made an attempt to stake a claim to a road that we believe and still believe belongs to the state of Alaska. And the federal government told us that was an inadvertent act. That's their way of saying they made a mistake. Now, I'm here to talk to you just a little bit about two classes of people. There's liars and believers. And the liars won't have any following if nobody believes their lies. When Senator Halford asked someone to address the idea of just exactly the nuts and bolts of this, I'm not familiar with those court cases, but I want you to consider the fact that you may be being lied to about where we stand. If you take into consideration some of the other testimony concerning the state's rights and the statehood issues and the state compact and all that state stuff, you may find that we're being lied to in there. When I asked the other members of the Alaska Reclamation Crew what they'd like me to tell you today, asked me if I'd tell you a little story. It's a poem written by Garrison Keillor. Please indulge me. It goes like this. I came to Alaska on the 4th of July to see the mountains against the sky, to walk the hills in the soft twilight of Alaska's long midsummer night. I've been to Fairbanks and Anchorage, too, to Juneau and Nome and Kotzebue. But the strangest place that I ever saw was a town on the banks of the Mackinac, in the foothills of the Cardiac Range, just west of Wrangell, east of Haines, south of Barrow-by-the-Sea, a village they called Hyperbole. Settled slowly over the years by up-and-coming pioneers who made the northern pilgrimage up to Alaska to get rich. Arriving several years too late for gold or oil or real estate, having missed out on the prize, they decided to stay here and tell lies. Whoppers, tall tales, fable fiction, open season, no restriction. All the liars for miles around gathered there in one small town, swearing with one hand on the gospel to things not just untrue, but impossible. The first lies that they told were modest. The gold they had found by sifting sawdust, the salmon they caught that weighed a ton, the lies you would hear from anyone, how smart they were, and who they had fooled, and how, and when, and all the funny things they had said. Women, they had almost wed. Then the other day, sitting in the Red Dog bar, drinking whiskey from a jar, smoking butts and spitting chew and saying things that just weren't true, they didn't notice as they lied that it was getting dark outside. Then a shadow fell, and the earth began to tremble with a sound like 40,000 air compressors that frightened all those old BFers who ran outside and were amazed to see that all the hills had raised. With each lie told by each liar, the land around had gotten higher. So now their town looked rather small beneath those hills a mile tall. A town that once could keep its eyes on yonder distant, clear horizon, sunk down in a set of trenches for being so unconscientious. A town once on a high plateau, now in a valley, like, well, Juneau. I do want to add to that that I think the seriousness of this issue is the divisiveness of it. I heard the other day where a politician will offer to build a bridge where there is no river. And I see an opportunity here, maybe not to build a bridge, because you want to be very careful where you build a bridge, because all the traffic patterns for the next years, few years, have to go over those bridges. They have to go that way, this way or that way. This may be a crossing, maybe a ferry crossing, but we cannot allow a river of this divisiveness to flow through this state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. And thanks for making it, keeping it interesting. Is Don Ritzano here from Fairbanks Native Association? Okay. Golden North Archer Association, Ken Borsak.
Hi, my name is Ken Borsak, and I'm testifying on behalf of Golden North Archery Association. I want to thank you all for this opportunity. Our membership is made up of over 300 Americans. They're people that were born and grew up in the United States. People who go to school here, who have jobs here, families, pay taxes, serve in our military, and contribute to our society. People who have the right to call America home, people who have the right to expect equal treatment under our laws. As humans, our members also have a long tradition of outdoor and wildlife use. Our link to the natural world is an important and vital part to our effort in living a content and satisfying life. We depend on nature and wildlife to provide food for our bodies, tranquility for our spiritual well-being, and a source of understanding for our minds. The question is, should we be denied equal opportunity to experience and utilize wildlife simply because of the color of our skin or the side of the tracks we were born on? The answer is no. America is founded on the belief that all people should be free and treated equally, and ANILCA flies in the face of this basic premise. It gives preferential treatment to one race or locale of people over other American citizens. We believe this is discrimination in its most blatant form. The only way to solve the discriminatory laws of ANILCA is to change them. It is unconscionable to think that changing our constitutional right for equality and making discrimination legal is going to solve any problem. Make no mistake, the importance of this issue to us. It is so important that our members are willing to draw a line in the sand and say no more federal discrimination. We must do everything in our power to amend NELPA in the hopes that equality will prevail. Our federal delegation is apparently playing politics and does not want to get their hands dirty on this issue. It is time for them to put aside politics, roll up their sleeves, and do what is right. Protect Alaska's people from federal discrimination by insisting that federal laws treat all Alaskans equally. We support and commend you state legislators who are working to protect the integrity of our state constitution and equality. For you legislators who believe that some Alaskans should have more rights than others, we will remember you on Election Day. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Marasek. Next, we'll take the Alaska Federation of Natives, Jerry Sapp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jerry Sam. I'm the chief of the village of Alaska, and I'm also the representative for Alaska Federation of Natives for the TCC and Dion villages, which consists of 43 villages, mostly rural and part urban natural. And Alaska is a community located 6 miles north of the Arctic Circle. And the only way that we can get there is by airplane, and it is considered rural, and that's the way we prefer it. That's the way we like our lifestyle. And being out there, we have a lot of hardships. Being the airfare and cost may drive prices up for my villages. For transportation, gas, oil, food, groceries, and all sorts. And seeing that that your bill is trying to define public lands, what I'm trying to get across to you folks is that people who live out in the rural areas have always lived out there because that is their way of life, and one way of living out there is by providing food for their family, and that main source is going out there and hunting and fixing up the land. And what you are doing is talking about defining federal and state, and when we are out there, we don't go by those guidelines because we have to try to get food for the next day and so forth. And as you may have known, that we have also been affected by the flood. This may be a different issue, but then that also drives the food away from the federal land that you might be thinking of. So that. And the only protection that we are getting at this time is from ANILCA, with a federal issue for subsistence for rural Alaskans. And you talked about some sort of solutions that you might be talking about. All the other outdoor councils, everybody else that may be testifying here, are claiming that they are Alaskans. And to be Alaskan residents, you can file for Alaskan residence and may take up a few years to gain that. But we out in rural Alaskans are truly Aboriginals who really rely on subsistence foods out there. So I see that taking a big effect on my people. And the only way that we would like to see it is being an advocate change for rural people. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sam. Next is the Interior Wildlife Association, Jeff Gray and Bud Weiss.
say that since I'm doing so, Bud will not be speaking. Our group was formed in Fairbanks in 1970, and it's a conservation group, sportsmen, and we've existed for 25 years now, and we kind of surface on occasion for it. So we've done so somewhat lately. We are in favor of the Joint Resolution 19, and we want to avoid the subsistence part of this, and I believe the resolution speaks mainly to states' rights and game management. That's, of course, what we're concerned about. I would just point out, though, that having been on the scene before and after statehood, that it seems to me like the rural people have always been taken care of pretty well in a matter of game management. Seasons and limits. Seasons were set so that people in the rural areas could take game later, and they could keep it at a time when us urban people couldn't get out because the lakes were froze or whatever. More recently, there's large areas of Alaska, and we're more interested in interior Alaska, are closed to urban hunters now. The upper Chandelier is closed to urban hunters. The Yukon Flats, the area between Minchuma and McGrath, over Koyukuk, and No Attack. These are all areas where I can't fly out and shoot a bush. And some of these are, for instance, a No Attack closure is only 2 years old, done by the state game board to protect the human rights of people. No Attack Village. So, and I just point out that there's always been an interest in Alaska and seeing the people protected and really have a preference for fish and game. But the points I'd like to make today are mainly that we thought we did have a state good compact which gave the state management of the fish and game, and it's been said many times today already that's been eroded. I might just mention the Babbitt case, which Governor Hickel finally filed. And if you remember that case, the federal judge Holland came back and said at one point a couple years ago that it looks like the state has a good case here, and if the feds want to strengthen their case, they better get some better arguments in. And they apparently did, and eventually Judge Holland rendered a decision that said that well, he couldn't find anywhere in congressional hearing testimony or anywhere else that supported this thing of the federal feds actually managing the game in Alaska. But he said, obviously, Congress made a mistake, and so I'm going to grant them the right to do so. So this is a type of erosion we've had from states' rights into the federal arena. When it actually comes down to the bottom line, the federal courts are now managing game on all of Alaska. Mine Village case is, of course, a classic example of this happening. There could be no restrictions put on by the state on the taking of game by these rural areas, even if alternate sources of protein are available. So we think that this Resolution 19 is a start. A small start in the proving this erosion of states' rights. And reference to Senator Halford's comment about how do we solve this, I think if we can get game management back out of the federal court into a state board which has the final word, then we will see a good allocation fishing game or citizen of Alaska. And that completes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Gray. This is for the information of those who joined us. A number of people came in. This is the Senate Resources Committee. We're holding a hearing on Senate Joint Resolution 19, sponsored by Senator Mike Miller from Arnold Hall. We have
two Lathrop graduates right here on this panel, so.
Miller and Frank.
I say that in jest, of course. I know many fine friends of mine. Bonnie Williams? Oh, there you are. All right. Right, I was looking away.
Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity, Senator. I'm Bonnie Williams. I'm representing the Republican Party of Alaska. The Bill of Rights of the United States was ratified in 1791. These 10 amendments to the Constitution spell out our sacred God-given rights to take precedence over anything in the Constitution and anything that may be conceived by Congress, President, courts, or states. These are inalienable rights, and they are what make us free Americans in a nation of law. They spell out our rights and say that we are equal under the law, equal in our access to those rights. In the 1850s, realizing that slavery was incompatible with these ideals and truth forming the foundation of our nation, the Republican Party of America was formed by Abraham Lincoln and other thoughtful men of the age. By 1860, we were locked in a terrible civil war. Republicans on one side saying freedom of the individual, now slavery was the most important, and with Southerners on the other side saying states' rights was the most important. We all know who won. The 13th Amendment to the Constitution banned slavery forever. The 14th Amendment said that all laws applied equally to all people, regardless of race. The 15th Amendment said that the right to vote could not be denied by reason of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. In 1919, the 19th Amendment said that the right to vote could not be denied by reason of sex. In 1971, the 26th Amendment said that the right to vote for those 18 and older could not be denied by reason of age. The Constitution of the State of Alaska, written in 1956, reflects these ideals of equality, this culminating pinnacle for which men have died time and time again knowing they were right. Article 1, Section 1. This Constitution is dedicated to the principles that all persons have a natural right to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and the enjoyment of the rewards of their own industry. That all persons are equal and entitled to equal rights, opportunities, and protection under the